Tuesday night to you and yours. Bay Raggin here. Totally Driven Radio rocks. That's right. Totally Driven Radio rocks. Say it fast, say it slow, just get driven and rock and roll. So let's do it. Tonight, my guest, my paisan, my new best friend, drummer extraordinaire over in Italy, the one and only Mr. John Macaluso. John has played on over 200. 200. Let me say that again. 200 freaking albums. You know, most people probably don't even own 200 albums or CDs in their musical collection today. And this dude's played on over 200 of them. So that's, like, scary. I mean, what else can you say? It's just freaking scary. But some of the people he's played with, you might know, like TNT, Yngwie J. Malmsteen. He has studied the drums under people like Tommy Aldridge, you know? Tommy Aldridge, Ozzy Osbourne, Whitesnake. Come on. What more can you say? But, you know, so we sat down and talked last week, me and John, and taped this interview, and it was like I have a new best friend. We talked all about musical stuff, fun conversation, the music business, Italy, Italian food, how he went to Italy and just never left. And he's still there, and he's living there, married and enjoying life. So we talk about his new band, Stone Leaders. They got a new album out. Check them out, self-titled. Stone Leaders. We're also going to play a tune off of that album as well, the first single, after the interview. So pull up a chair, pull up your headphones, however you're going to listen. Just turn it up, enjoy, relax, and listen to the cool, soothing words of myself and John Macaluso.
All right, you hear me?
Now I can hear you even better.
How are you, man?
Good, man. How are you?
Where are you?
I'm in Philly.
Ah, I love Philly.
So I got to ask you a question, since you're a fellow Italian. Is it gravy or sauce?
It's sugo.
Okay. Teach me. Talk to me. Come on.
When I say sauce, they say, what the hell are you talking about? So it's sugo. And the funny thing is, ragu means bolognese sauce. So you say, when you say ragu, it's like the meat sauce. But they don't know gravy, but for me, it's always sauce.
It's always sauce.
So, man, yeah, I'm in Italy now, man. I came over here to do a clinic, and I never left. I've been here for like 7 years, man.
Holy
You've been here?
I've never been there. Now, you know what? I am like scared to travel across the ocean.
Oh, man, you always make it. No matter how scary it is, you always make it.
Well, that's fingers crossed. That's a good thing.
The funny thing is, they can't turn around if there is a problem. That's the scary part.
Yeah, right. There's only one way to go, and it's down.
Yeah, that sucks, man. You know, I was with Riot a long time ago, touring. We're going, coming back from Japan, and the plane had to make an emergency landing in Alaska. And we were coming down in fucking ice water, and me and Mike DeMeo were losing it. Finally, we landed, and it was like emergency landing because there was something fucked up with the plane. I told those guys, I'm living in Alaska. I'm not getting on the next plane. So eventually, they gave me a bunch of Jack Daniels drinks, and I got back on the plane.
So what? Like, how did you, like, you go to Italy for a clinic, and you just end up staying there? Like, what was the deciding factor?
You know, I came – actually, I moved over to Sweden. Okay. To – I wanted to start my band Ark again for like the 20th time. And me and the guitar player Tor Osby, we decided we're going to do it. And I moved over there. I was there for like a month, and we had another big fucking fight. And it ended up, I had nowhere to stay. So a friend of mine said, he goes, John, man, come to Italy, do a couple of clinics, stay at my house. So I went over to Italy and I stayed with this dude. And before I knew it, I was like getting booked and traveling around doing the couch tour. And then I ended up getting an apartment, and I met a girl. I got married. It just happened. I never left. It was weird.
You know what, too, though? I'm guessing like it's probably like from a business standpoint and money making opportunity, it's actually better over there than being here in the States.
It was. It was for years, man. Like, I was pumping and getting a lot of recording work. I'm still getting recording work, thank God. But gigs have turned into, like, America now.
Really?
You know, They want cover bands. They want tribute bands.
Really?
They tell you, yeah, they tell you they're going to pay this, and then you get like a third of what – no, you get like three quarters of what you were promised. It's becoming like there now. So it's finally hitting here, but it was great for years, man, you know?
Wow, that's bumming me out now.
It depends on where you go. Like metal was huge. And now it's kind of dying. And, you know, I don't know. Some of my friends are saying, John, come back to America. It's kicking. But for some reason, I can't believe that. Are they lying to me?
They're lying. I mean, I can tell you, I can tell you about Philly. I mean, in Philly here, it's like totally turning into a tribute band scene. And
unbelievable.
It's killing me. Like the few good original bands left here in the area, I mean, they're getting sandwiched between tribute bands on shows or opening up for tribute bands with like four tribute bands on one show. It's like something's very wrong here.
Yeah, I'd rather flip pizzas, man. I mean, I would never do that. I mean, over here, they got the makeup and shit. Or if the guy, you know, U2 tribute, he's got the hat like the Edge. Like they try to look like him, yeah, too. It's sickening, man.
Yeah, it's a whole weird thing going on. I don't like it.
You want to hear a strange fucking thing? Over here, okay, there's about 100 Deep Purple cover bands, and Ian Paice comes and plays with three of them, which is cool. But there's a fucking two or three Spandau Ballet cover bands. Now,
stop it.
Would you? Yeah, I'm serious. I'm like, dude, wait, you're in a Spandau Ballet cover band? Yeah. I mean, we know one song in America. Over here, they're still big. It's weird, man. I mean, that's like when you. I'd rather go to like a school or something, or take a course to be an insurance agent, a Spandau Ballet tribute band. Holy fuck, man.
I was going to say, how many times can you play the song True in one night?
There's another one. Go! Da, 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 da. Holy shit. Hey, do you play? You play?
I used to attempt to play guitar, if you want to call it that.
Huh?
Yeah. Not no more.
And you got smart.
Yeah, exactly.
You know the guys in Philly from Doro? Do you know like Johnny D from Britney Fox and Nick? They play with Doro now. Do you know those guys?
You know what? I've met Johnny a few times, and Nick has actually been on my show. I guess it was like 2 years ago when he released a solo album.
Oh, they're amazing people, man.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I love them.
Good stuff. That's awesome. Well, how about here's another friend of mine that you actually played on his album that he just put out a few months ago, Tony Harnell, Starbreaker.
Yeah, I didn't do the last album. I did the first two albums.
Okay.
And the first one was brilliant. I loved it. And then the second one, the bass player was also the producer. So something happened where he didn't want to do it, or Tony didn't want him. So we got a different, I think Tony produced it. I didn't like the way it came out. And then the third album, it was kind of like, you know, we talked about it. And, when you get into doing a third album, it's not a project anymore.
Yeah.
So I said, a third album, it's got to be like a band. You know, if I'm going to do an album with you guys, everything's got to be equal split. And then I saw a photograph of Tony and Magnus, and it said, new Starbreaker coming out. So I said, okay, I guess I'm not – I guess they didn't want to be equal. Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, I know Tony for years. I played in TNT with him in 1990 and 92. Up to 92 I played with them.
That's wild.
TNT. So, man, what's going down?
So you, man, you got this this new project out. Is it a project or a band? That's a good question right there, because it sounds like it just started out of like a freak accident.
Yeah, it kind of did, man. I mean, what happened was when I came to Europe, I was making my living doing clinics, man. You know, I would get recording work, and but most of the bread came from, and I had to survive, man, you know, because I would stay in hotels or people's houses, and you know, I didn't plan on really living here. I was just saying, okay, I'm going to make some cake and travel around, have a good time, eat some good food. eventually I lived here, but when I first came, it was only clinics. So a friend of mine who I do albums with, he calls himself Mysteria, and he's a keyboard player.
Okay.
And he lives in Croatia now, and he said, he talks like Dracula. He said, John, come on over and come to Zagreb, Croatia, and do a clinic. So I went to Croatia. I didn't even know where the fuck Croatia was, actually. And it, right next to Italy, man, I flew over and I did a clinic at this like Academy of Music.
Okay.
And with clinics, it's weird because you can't really plan it. Sometimes you got students that are all drummers, and sometimes you got their mothers or their girlfriend, and you don't want to bore them. So I knew this wasn't only drummers. It was like singers, and it was a lot of fans of Yngwie. I saw so really quickly. I said to the organizer, "I need some musicians. Just get me a couple of musicians very quickly because I want to play some songs." So he hooked me up with Ivan, who is the co-writer and co-producer on Stone Leaders. He plays guitar and sings, and also the bass player Marco. He said, "These guys are great, man." So no rehearsal. We went in and we did Burn from Deep Purple and I think Stormbringer or something. And they killed it, man. And I was like, wow, unrehearsed, just nailing it like that. I said, let me get your numbers. And when I come back, maybe we'll do something. So Ivan and me started to write through the mail. I would pump down some drum grooves and he would put some guitar riffs. And, you know, that's how it started. And then he sent me something that was really fucking cool. And I was like, wow, man, this guy's talented. So are you familiar with ARC, my band ARC?
No, I'm not.
Okay, my band, we did an album called Burn the Sun. Yoan Londa was singing. And anyway, it was kind of similar, the writing process. What I did, I went in and I recorded drums first.
Okay.
Only drums. Almost like it was a song. I did verse, chorus. I did a whole arrangement. And I sent it to him. And then he wrote the stuff on top of my arrangement. And then if he wanted to, like, extend or cut. Mooney! That's Mooney, my dog. I named him after Keith Moon. Shut up. Okay. Yeah, so everything was done kind of like that. Like, drums were done first, you know? And then he took the ideas and he wrote the guitar stuff over it. And then I wrote lyrics and he wrote vocal melodies. And that's the way we started it, man. And then I didn't want like a prog band, you know, five members and, you know, the keyboard player, you know. So I said, can we keep this a four-piece band? And The Who is my favorite band. So
okay.
I said, I got an idea. Why don't we do like a two-singer thing? Because he says he knew another great singer. So we got this guy, Dino Jelosic, in the band, and he sings and plays keys, and Ivan sings and plays guitar. So it's two lead singers. You know, sometimes they're singing together. Sometimes one guy's singing or they harmonize together. So it's cool because a four-piece band, but, you know, we got the keyboard player, we got the two singers, drummer, bass player. So it's pretty fat sounding for four people, you know?
That's pretty wild. Like, it's kind of like a weird way of doing it. Like, I mean, you're basically coming up like with a song on drums first, and then they're writing the guitars over it.
Yeah, you know, I did it with my solo record. Solo record, I got James LaBrie on it, and Vitaly Kuprin, Chris Caffrey, Alex Massey. I did it the same way, man. I pumped down drums first, and then everything was written on top of that. And the thing is, as long as you're working with talented people, they make you sound good.
Yeah. I was going to say, you got to find like a special person though, to be able to, you know what I mean? To write that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Because usually things are done in like the Van Halen style. Like I got a guitar riff, but the thing about the way we do it, we did with ARC and my solo record and Stone Leaders, the result is always way different than anything you expect, you know? Because sometimes I'm doing like melodies on drums. My favorite drummer is Terry Bozzio. So he does a lot of melodic shit with the toms and the bells. Sometimes if you listen to only the drums, you could get a riff from that.
Right.
You know? So it's just a way of writing where you don't get your typical like Dawkins style song. you know. So that's the way we did it, man. And yeah, the result is sometimes really strange and you know, kind of artsy, you know.
Now, when you're doing that, are you hearing the guitar yourself in your head, like the way you're thinking it's going to go? Or are you like surprised with what gets sent back to you with guitar wise?
You know, usually I write before I do any of this shit. I get a title because I write the lyrics, so I get a song title. And like the first track we did, I called Box of Time. And it kind of gives me a mood, you know. I start to think, okay, this one, the title would fit a song, kind of up tempo, you know. It just gives me kind of an idea. So I play a groove, and I don't really imagine a guitar riff, but I imagine a vibe. I say this is going to be kind of a darker song, or you know, this one more complicated. So you know, But I always think of arrangement. You know, I always think, okay, this is going to be a chorus, so I got to open it up here. Right. I can't play too busy. Or this is a verse, so maybe I'm going to play more busy here. Or the chorus guy, I think, okay, I'm going to try to make it Pink Floyd-y, so I'll take the volume down and play on the ride cymbal. So, yeah, but in the end, man, I don't know what it's going to be like. Which is kind of cool when I get the result back, or I sit with the guitar player and he comes up with something. I'm like, oh, that's it, man. You know? So yeah, it's just a different way of writing, but it works, man. Depends on who you work with though. I tried it with other guys and, it was like a fucking nightmare, you know?
And how about the recording process? Like, were you guys in the studio together, or was it just emailing tracks?
Oh yeah. 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 Like, what we did, it was kind of like a demo. I went in the studio and recorded the drums, sent it to Ivan. He recorded guitars. And then he came where I live over here in Italy, came to visit, and he wrote the vocal melodies and I did the lyrics. So then we both went back to Croatia and we did the real thing. I recorded the drum tracks and then I went back and he recorded the guitars for real. Then I flew back and, I produced the vocal sessions, and then I came back and he worked with Dino, the other singer, for the other half of the album. It took a couple of years, man, actually. I mean, we didn't work on it every day, of course, but yeah. To finally finish the thing, it was probably like a 2-year process, man, because it was, you know, just doing it here and there, but finally we're done. And I think it's going to come out in America next month.
Cool. Now, where did the name Stone Leaders come from?
Stone Leaders, when Ivan was here, he was looking through my lyric book, and I had a song called Stone Leaders, which was kind of about statues. You know, I'm like a big World War II and Civil War historian.
Okay.
You know, I'm obsessed with that shit. So just looking at like a statue of, I don't know if it was Patton or General Grant, you know. He's still, it's like a stone leader, you know. They made a statue over the guy, you know. And he said, this is a cool band name. I said, really? He said, yeah. And then I thought about it. I'm like, yeah, it is, man. So for the artwork on the cover, the only thing I ever did besides drums was artwork because my father's an artist. And,
cool.
You know, I'm not really that good at all, but I can get ideas and thank God for the computer. I can make them look good. I can't draw. But if you saw the cover of the album, it's like the Civil War soldier. And then it's like the two, like the war angels. If you ever see like Arc de Triomphe, like, the Arc of Triumph in France, they always have the troops being led into battle with some angel over their head, you know, right. Like Joan of Arc type thing. So with this cover, I went to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania a long time ago, and I went into an antique shop, and I was checking out the old photos from like the 1800s. And so I got to plug in. My phone's running out of juice. One second. Yeah. So one of these photos had a Civil War soldier with an alligator sitting on him. I said, that's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. He had an alligator like sitting on his lap. So, I said, well, that's peace, huh? It's got like man and beast together, you know? And I said, wait, that's a cool idea for the cover. It's the Civil War soldier with the alligator, kind of symbolizing peace between man and beast.
Right.
And there's like these two skeleton, like angels of death, and they're speaking into the ears of the two war angels, and they're saying, you guys are not needed anymore because it's peaceful times. And that's why they have like the bummed out look on their face. They have nothing to do. They need a new gig. So long story short, I kind of did it in Photoshop, and that's the cover.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Now, is there going to be any live shows or?
I don't know, man. You know, like what you're saying with, you know, for example, when I played with Malmsteen, we would we'd make an album. And before we even put the album out, we were on the road.
Right.
And we would go out for like 5 months and we'd touring with Dio and then headlining. And, you know, we would go out for months. It was like going in a submarine. I would come home and say hi to my family. Hey, my name's John. You know, it was like we were out on the road. Today, man, like tours are like maybe 2-3 weeks or
right. If
or maybe some people go for like a week. You know, it's just like really everything has changed. So just I'm pretty realistic with this, saying if there's a real opportunity, we can play live. But to like jump in a van and drive around Croatia or like wherever the hell, I don't know, man. It all depends on how good the album does. But even albums are a crazy situation these days.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Everything is completely changed. So it's not like the old days. So I can't really say if there's going to be live shows or not. I just have to see how this thing does, you know?
How about videos? Any videos for singles or?
Yeah. We're gonna make a video. Like we put out some lyric video, which is just, I hate lyric videos, but if you put out like an MP3, this is our new single. Like a lot of people don't even listen to it. They need to see something.
Yeah.
So it's weird. It's weird. So we put out the lyric video for the first single, Box of Time, but I want to make a real video. So that's the next step, I think. And I want to hopefully do it before we put this thing out next month.
Nice.
You know?
Nice.
Yeah, I definitely want to make a video.
Yeah, it's the whole thing. I was just talking to a buddy of mine with one of the original bands from this area yesterday. And he was saying to me, he's like, you know, because they're getting ready to put an album out next month. And he's like, you know, I want to do, like, just put a single out every month. I said, well, that's what I would have done. I would have just thrown a single out every month and then eventually released the whole album because nobody's buying albums anyway. So what's the difference? But,
you know, I toured with Bumblefoot and Ron Thorne. Yeah. He says, he's like, why should I go and make a full record and spend the year and a half when, you know, nobody buys the shit anymore. So what he does, he makes singles.
Yeah.
And he puts the singles out. And, yeah, he always does pretty good. So I'm sure he's doing good, but that gave me an idea. I said, man, you're right. You know, look at this thing. It took over 2 years to make. Right. And then it comes out, and the next day it's free anyway.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, yeah, so I'm just realistic with the whole thing. Like, you know, it used to be like you go on tour, and the record label is with you, and you got the booking agency, and it's completely different these days, man. You know? I mean, so I really can't tell what's going to happen with it, you know? Yeah, it's things are good and bad. I mean, a lot of, bands just stopped making records, you know?
Right.
And it sucks for the future because, I think, this generation kind of dropped the ball.
You know? Big time. You know? Big time.
Yeah. I mean, they're not creating anything new and they're just looking for a new way out. And a lot of them are not used to ever getting paid. So what's killing music in Europe, definitely in the Mediterranean areas, like, you know, Spain and Italy and parts of France, what's killing music here is the new generation doesn't play to get paid.
Yeah.
They go and play for their friends and the club owners love them because they don't charge a fee. So that kills people like me and the guys who want to do it for a living.
Right.
Or still do it for a living. Yeah. So it's, that's the bad part about it. The good thing about my life now is I've been recording my whole life. I made like 200 albums.
That's insane to me.
I make a living on people hiring me for albums, you know, and home studios now are everywhere. So I get a lot of album work just from guys that, you know, you probably never heard of, you know, right. But some of them are very talented and, you know, they got the home studio. So they send me the tracks. I go in, record, send it back to them. So like, thank God I got that because, just to make a living at music these days is, without that type of thing. Like, thank God I got a reputation as a recording artist because just to make a living out of it, it's sometimes if I wasn't doing this, it would be impossible is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
I would have to join Spandau Ballet cover band.
Hey, it's true. It's true.
Yeah. It's true. Good one, man.
You know what? I mean, it's hitting me too because so many musical artists I interview anymore, and it just comes up in the conversation that, you know, they got day gigs, like they're working day jobs. Do. You know,
unbelievable.
Yeah, like I just talked with a band 2 weeks ago. Their new album just came out. They just got off an arena tour with Hailstorm, and they're doing a club tour now.
Cool.
And, New Year's Day, they're called.
Uh-huh.
And the guitar player was telling me he works a day gig. I'm like, what? Like, how does this happen?
And you'd be surprised. A lot of these dudes, like, my friend Alex Masti, he's a great guitar player. He's from Italy. He lives over in L.A. for like 30 years. And he's like, man, like, I'm not going to name names, but some of these famous fucking guys from like the hair days, like my generation, you know, they're working at like, not Wendy's, but you know, they're working in restaurants or you know, car dealerships. And it's, you know, what are they going to do? And a lot of those guys, they all move to Vegas now because they want to get jobs in these plays or like these, what do you call that thing that was a movie with Tom Cruise?
Rock of Ages.
Yeah, Rock of Ages. Like, they want to get those gigs so they could make some money and hopefully do their music in the afternoon or night, you know?
Right.
That's the way it's become, you know? So I do a bit of everything. I got to do clinics. I got to teach a little bit, record, do some gigs. Like, I'm going on tour next week with a band called Tomorrow's Eve from Germany, and we just put a new album out. And, you know, it's a 2-week tour. So go do the gigs and come back. It's very, honestly, man, when you talk to some of these dudes, like if you go to the NAMM show and you say, how you doing, man? And they go, I'm great. Things are kicking. They're lying. Yeah. They're straight out lying because, everybody these days is, not struggling, but you really have to use your brain, man. You know, you got to use your brain and think of what am I going to do, to bring in bread. And, you know, if I'm not going to work in that Spandau Ballet cover band, you got to think about, you know, education. Like I teach or write books. I'm putting out a DVD. Like you got to kind of have all your bases covered or you got to go get a day gig, man.
You got to basically like brand yourself now and have all these different outlets to brand yourself to, like you said, like books and DVDs and teaching and stuff like that. You got to do it all.
You got my typing has become faster than my double paradiddle. But I hate it because when I get home, man, it's like, okay, of course there's Facebook. I got 3 Facebook pages, the official, the one with my friends and the one, you know, for business. And then I got to check emails and then I got to do Instagram. And by the time you get home, it's like, I say hi to my wife. I kiss my dog. I walk him. And then 3 hours, I'm like, typing. Because if you don't do it and you don't have a manager, you know, you could lose work or you're not going to work. So I got to kind of, you got to be a secretary too, which really sucks.
Yeah.
Because I don't look good in the skirt. Oh, but I'm secretary. Okay. Anyway. Yeah. You know, man, you got to have all the bases covered. You got to have all the bases covered or you got to do the day gig. And I don't know anything else, to be honest with you. I'm like Fred Flintstone. I could do a little artwork, but, you know, I've only played drums my life, man. So just reality, man, smacks people in the face.
Absolutely. absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, how about, I got to ask you, and you brought him up, what was it like working with Yngwie?
You know, man, okay, my band Ark, you should check out. Ark was a great band. There's an album called Burn the Sun. You should check it out. But the first album, okay, this is funny because way before I got the Yngwie gig, a friend of mine, he worked for Guitar Player magazine. He said, Yngwie is looking for a drummer. Here's the information. Send them a video. I sent them a VHS, one of his big ass videos in the mail. And he called me and he said, yeah, the drumming is really great. And, you know, you look good and blah, blah, blah. But can you twirl? I said, my sticks? He goes, yeah. Can you? I don't see any twirling and stuff. I said, no, it doesn't sound good. And it was like complete silence. It's like, brr, brr, brr. He goes, that's not funny. Oh. And I go, oh, okay. And then anyway, he goes, anyway, I got your video. I got your information. Goodbye. I think I pissed him off with that. Years later, I got a call and I heard, is this John? I said, yeah. He goes, this is Yngwie J. Malmsteen. And I would have thought it was a joke, but I remember the voice, man. And I'm like, fuck, it's Yngwie. And he goes, I got a copy of your Ark record. And is it you drumming on it? And I said, yeah. And right away, he was like, can you fly down to Florida and record my album? My manager will call you to talk about details. I said, fuck yeah, man. And I flew down to Florida. And he picked me up, and we went right to the bar. And we were drinking for like 3 hours. And I'm like, this is a great gig, man. And we were hanging out. And then he goes, let's play. And I go, wait, now? He goes, yeah, let's go to the studio and play. I go, Yngwie, man. I mean, I can't even move. He's like, come on, let's go. So we go to his studio and he gives me the sticks. And like, I was like, duh. And he goes, play me a solo. I played like a solo. It was like, beep, 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 beep. I mean, it was ridiculously bad, probably. And he goes, okay, you got the gig. So we went back to the bar and we started, we're having a great time. But the funny thing is, I bought a drum called an Octobon. It's a big tube, right? It's like a skinny drum, but it looks like a tube. Okay. Maybe like, it's like 2 feet long or 3 feet long. But it's a 6-inch drum. It's very small, right? So after my solo, he's got like those mirrored sunglasses on, like Eric Estrada would wear from Chips, you know? So you can't see his eyes. And I don't know where he's looking. He looks like he's looking at me, but he's not. I'm seeing his head turn. He's looking at the drum. And he goes running across the floor, and he kicks the drum. Boom! I just met the guy like 3 hours before this, right? So he kicks my drum across the floor. I go, what the fuck are you doing? He goes, that drum's way too small to play on my album. I need big drums. And that was the introduction, man. And we sat in the studio rehearsing for about 3 weeks and writing. You know, pretty much he writes all the stuff. And, you know, but with drumming, he's like, for a drummer, it's kind of a dream because he goes, give me bigger fills, do longer fills, give me more double bass, play heavier here. So to a drummer, it's kind of a dream. Like in Japan, when we did the first tour, I told him, I said, Yngwie, man, he plays a little bit of drums, right? He rips off Cozy Powell. Sorry, he loves Cozy Powell. So I said, Yngwie, man, I saw Hetfield and Lars Ulrich do like a double drum solo. And he goes, really? So he actually hooked it up. In Japan, they wheeled him out during my drum solo, and we traded. We did like double drum solos together, man. The only bad thing is in the drum magazine the next month was a big picture of him and a tiny picture of me. You know? But no, I mean, listen, man, of course he's difficult in ways when you're not playing, you know. Yeah. You know, he's Yngwie, man. I mean, I respect Yngwie. I always did. Like, people make fun of him and that, but you know what? Nobody could play like Yngwie. It's him.
That's true.
And we had some problems, but he liked me, man. So he liked my drumming. And, you know, I realized that I kind of knew how to treat them. You know, you can't. Here's his saying: "It's my way or the Yngwie." and whose name is on the bass drum head? And I would turn to the drums and go Yamaha, and he would go, "That's not funny." But you know, I did almost three years with him, and big tours, and you know, we had some problems, but it wasn't really because of us. It was because of other people that were involved, you know? So, to this day, I respect them, and, you know, I love what we did live. The albums are another story. No matter how good you played, the mix was always destroyed, you know? Right. But, I put it this way. People ask me the question all the time, but I worked with guys who are just as famous. I'm not going to say their names, but they are much, much, much more difficult to work with than Yngwie, man.
Right.
You know?
I can imagine. But,
yeah, man, it was a trip. It was a trip. It's an experience. You know, those tours, it was rock and roll, man. It was real rock and roll. It was crazy.
Did you ever ask him later on about the twirling stick comment?
No, in fact, you know, I think about it to this day. I'm like, why didn't I ever talk about that, man? Because, like, he would have probably laughed about it, you know? We had a lot of time because rehearsals were 8 hours long, but we would not play. You know, it was like you get in there in the morning about – no, you get in there about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and you put your beer order in. He'd be like, okay, I'll take a six-pack of Beck's. I'll take a six-pack of Heineken. And give me that new Bud Ice, too. You know, he'd order like a case of beers for the day for him. And then everybody else would order their beer. And I can't DWI a drumming while intoxicated. I'm not a good drunk drummer. So I would have to just hang out the whole day drinking maybe a couple of beers because you never know when he's going to say, let's play.
Right.
Sometimes he would snap out of it and go, what am I paying you guys for? Get up and get on the drums. And then there might be days where we'd listen to Jerky Boys for 7 hours. Seriously. So it was like unpredictable. But he keeps you on the toes. I don't know if he planned it or not, but we wouldn't rehearse his songs maybe till the last 3 or 4 days before the tour. And he would go, learn the songs. I wrote the songs. I don't need to rehearse the songs. So you'd be on stage going, a seventh sign. How does that start? You know, so he really makes you work in that way. You have to, like, do a lot of self-studying. It could be planned. It's actually a brilliant plan.
Right.
You know. Yeah, it's crazy times, man.
Now how about one of my all-time favorite drummers that actually you studied under? Tommy Aldridge.
Yeah, man. Oh, Aldridge was, you know, he's a Texan. So he's got that accent. And he's got these phrases, like those Southern phrases where he's just hilarious, man. So basically, he came to New York. He was there for a month. And he was doing like 4, you know, you pay once a week. You paid like for a block of lessons. So I did the whole month with him, like 4 big lessons, 4 two-hour lessons. And it was a trip, man, because, you know, mainly to talking to him. I mean, he's been with everybody. He's a legendary drummer. He knows everybody. So just besides the drumming part of it, to actually talk with someone who's been through all that shit, you know, really helped me. And the stories he told me, man, were actually as important as some of the drumming stuff, you know?
Sure, I can imagine.
Yeah, I mean, but funny dude, man. Funny dude. Cool. He's one of your favorite drummers?
Oh, come on. He played with Randy Rhoads.
You know, unbelievable, man. Like, oh, I got a story for you. Anyway, Aldridge told me that why he started playing with his hands. Because when he was a kid in Texas, I think he said his father was very strict. And besides, he didn't want him to practice or make noise in the house. So he didn't play with sticks. He wanted to practice. So he started to play with his hands on the drum set.
Oh,
isn't that cool? That's how he got it, man. And speaking of Randy Rhoads, the Yngwie bus driver told me He said his bus company was the company that had the Randy Rhoads bus, and they still have the bus.
Whoa.
And it's in a bunker like somewhere, and it's all smashed from when the plane hit it, and they said they still have the fucking bus. How crazy is that, man?
Holy shit.
Yeah, I was freaking, man. His name is Tour Bus Terry. Tour Bus Terry. He talked like this. He said, "We have the damn bus, man."
That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a trip, man. It's a trip.
That's wild.
Yo, fuck it. This is anyway. Yeah, sorry. Tell me, man. I'm going off.
That's all right, man. Go off. You're loud. That's funny. So, all right. So, Stone Leaders, where should we send everybody to get the album, hear it?
Okay, I mean, you can find it on you can find it on Amazon and also my website, johnmacaluso.com. I have it, Vanity Music. So it's out now in Europe, but the physical copies are going to come out in America next month, June. And you can get it. Right now it's available online, but the physical copies going to come out in June in the U.S. And I've been here for a long time. I don't even know if you were to buy a CD these days.
Where?
And you were driving in the car, like a physical CD, where would you go besides buying it online? Like, I don't even know. Everything's so weird today, you know? Yeah. But anyway, for information, it's on my website, johnmacaluso.com, or Vanity Music, or if you want to order a copy now, you can get it on Amazon or my website or but the real release will be next month in America. Stone Leaders.
You know, the weird part is too, like, even like, if you buy a new car, you don't even get a CD player with it anymore.
that's crazy. I mean, it's like a bad technological horror film now. I went to LaGuardia Airport in New York. You could only pay with credit card. It's like the opposite of you. Like, here is like, you can only pay with cash. You can only pay with credit card. And if you sit at a restaurant, you have to use an iPad to order your food. There was no more people. I said, this is whacked, man. So it's the same with, like you just said, with cars. You got to have like an iPod or something to play music in your car. That's insane.
You're freaking me out now. See, I would not want that. I want to talk to a human being and order my stuff, make sure it's right.
It's unbelievable, man. Everything is like so. And I'm like Fred Flintstone of technology, man. So like, this stuff is killing me. No.
Wow.
But but Stone Leaders is a real, like, I call it dark prog because, like, I played with so many prog bands, you know, and some big ones, the Symphony X, James LaBrie, Arc. Symphony X is a brilliant band. I love them. And they start their tour tonight, actually, in Europe again. Mike Romeo, I just did his new album, the guitar player for Symphony X, called War of the Worlds Part 1. And, Mike Romeo is a brilliant songwriter. But put all the prog stuff aside, sometimes it's hard for me to listen to prog metal, that is, because, like, the songs are way too long and they start off one way. And by the time the song ends, you're like, how did the song begin? You know? And, like, the guys can't count to four. Everything's got to be a 9 and 11. You know, I love the technical aspect of music, but also I love songs, man, you know? So with Stone Leaders, we tried to really keep things kind of short and not so proggy. It's a rock band. It's a rock band. And the songs are, it's rock songs.
It is.
But it's got prog elements, of course. But, so I call it dark prog because also we did a lot of mid-tempo shit. You know, we didn't do like a double bass everywhere. And actually there is double bass everywhere, but we didn't make things over the top odd times and too long and too proggy. We can't, and we always hit you with a big chorus, but lyrically it's very dark. And I think musically it's very dark too. So I kind of call it dark prog, you know?
Hey, it works for me.
So you checked out the record?
Yeah, I was listening to it all day.
Beautiful. Yeah. You dig?
Yeah. You know what it kind of reminded me of? See, I wasn't getting the dark out of it, but it kind of reminded me of, like, how about this way? I'll say a darker Winery Dogs.
I haven't heard the Winery Dogs. I haven't heard it. So I don't really know. I thought it sounds like it's bluesy. Is it? Like, what is it like, Winery Dogs?
You know what? They got some blues to it, some rock. It's like a good rock record. But that's, I mean, it kind of reminds me of Stone Leaders. Just you guys are darker and heavier.
If you like the Winery Dogs and the Stone Leaders remind you of that, then cool. Yeah. I'm glad.
Yeah. I dig it.
Cool, man. Yeah, I mean, the first track on the record, Box of Time, is what we put out as, you know, the single. But we're trying to think of a good track to make a video for. And since every song is like a story, I think we can make a pretty wild video. If you have any ideas of a track you like, man, tell me and maybe we'll use it for a video.
Yeah.
Keep in touch, you know?
I will. I'll let you know, and I'll let Mr. Tedder know. I'm always on the phone with him.
Stone Leaders, just a talented bunch of dudes, man. And, you know, like I said, we wrote the songs in a very strange way. So, one song is called Fire Up the Oceans. And Ivan did this whole keyboard intro. And it's kind of like, what the hell is his name? What is that? He makes the movies like A Nightmare Before Christmas and stuff. What's his name?
Tim Burton.
Yeah, so I mean, it's almost got like this Tim Burton thing to it, the whole intro. And so when I heard that, I said, you know, I'm going to try to make like this fantasy story here. So Far Up the Oceans is kind of like, with all the problems right now around the world, religions fighting religions. Actually, that's been happening for thousands and thousands of years, but I kind of made it where, you know, every religious group prayed to their God and said, I wish you were here. I wish you were here. So one day their wishes came true and all the gods came down and they actually didn't like their gods. And the gods said, I'm not going home. I dig it here. So they got what they wished for, but now they were kind of like slaves. And I kind of felt like this movie thing in my mind and they're here to stay and you can't wish them away. And now you're kind of like, what did I do? You know, I got what I wished for, but I don't dig it. And, I had this kind of whole like movie thing in my head. So I think something like each song has some kind of strange story. Some of it's fantasy. Some of it's built on reality. You know, like the song Ignited, I wrote for Randy Colvin, my friend, great bass player, played with me with Yngwie and Ark. And MCM, and he passed away, I think, three and a half years ago. Wow. So I kind of, it's like a dedication to him, you know.
Right.
So each song lyrically has either a story or reality. Like the song Box of Time is about, I always said only music and a smell can bring you back in time to the exact place or. If you hear that song, you say, oh, my God, like deja vu. I remember being back at that moment. Or you smell someone's perfume and you're like, oh, it reminds me of that person from school. So Box of Time is like you heard a song or like I said, you smelt that perfume and it brought you back to that moment in time where you were trying to forget about. You know what I mean? So you put it in your box of time up in your mind and you stored it away, but now the box opened up. You know what I mean? So
that's deep.
So it's kind of like that thing, you know. I think that would make a cool video too. But we did that already, the lyric thing. So anyway, that's that. We're gonna try to think of a cool video to do. That's our next step. And then pop the record out, man.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then hopefully some live shows. I mean, 2.5 years, 3 years of writing this thing and putting it together, I think you should at least play one live show, for Christ's sakes.
Maybe, man, maybe. Maybe. I mean, we're pretty close to each other. I'm in Italy, they're in Croatia. It's like a couple hours, like an hour away, you know, by plane. So everything's possible.
Wouldn't that drive you crazy? I mean, it's got to drive you crazy. I mean, you got to want to play these songs live.
Yeah, I mean, I always love to support an album that I wrote or co-wrote or have been in a band. You know, I mean, it's just things change so much. Like it used to be normal. That's the way it worked 15 years ago, 10 years ago. Maybe I'm getting used to the way it is now. Like I make a record and sometimes I forget about it. And then it comes to me in the mail like a year and a half later, John, I mixed it. It's finally done. And I'm like, holy shit, I forgot about it. You know, everything is just so different in today's world, man. But of course, I mean, if there's that opportunity and things are going to be done right, anything's possible, you know?
Right, right.
To get that damn play live, you know?
Well, fingers crossed.
Yeah, thank you, man. Thank you. And if let me see. Yeah, so Philly cheesesteak. Let's get down to business, man.
Talk to me.
Oh, man. There's a place here. I just toured with Jennifer Batten.
Okay.
The guitar for Michael Jackson and Jeff Beck. And I was joking with her. We're great friends. And we were driving in the van. And she was telling me her whole history. And, like, you know, she had the biggest gig on the planet,
yeah,
which was Michael Jackson. She did the Bad Tour. She, you know, she was in the biggest places in the world, you know, and that was her first real gig. Imagine that. She was in like an Elvis Presley cover band. And then she got a call to audition. She got Michael Jackson. After that, she played with Jeff Beck, her hero. And then I was like, well, your career is really kicking because now you're driving around with me. But anyway, we played in Rome last month, and it was sold out, man. We kicked it. It was great. But the food on the menu, you're in Italy, it's always going to be good food. But I ordered the Philly cheesesteak.
Oh, boy.
And they had no idea, man.
No.
They had no idea.
No.
No idea at all. It just wasn't happening. I'm like, you guys, man, you got to try the real Philly cheesesteak.
Well, you know what they're doing now? Here's the new thing now, and you can go online and you can see it, and I've yet to try one, but actually it's funny. I'm going down to South Street tonight to go see a show. So on the corner of 4th and South is Jim's Steaks. Down half a block down South Street, right before you hit 3rd Street, is Lorenzo's Pizza. A slice of Lorenzo's Pizza is bigger than your freaking head. So now
okay, tell me.
It's a Lorenzo's Pizza and going up the street to Jim's and getting a cheesesteak, and they're wrapping the cheesesteak in the pizza and calling it a Philly taco.
Whoa, wait. They wrapped is the pizza around a cheesesteak or the cheesesteak's around the pizza?
The pizza gets wrapped around the cheesesteak.
Holy shit. Yeah. That sounds good. I could do that right now. Man versus food, I can do it. I can do that.
Yeah. My man. I'm dying to try it. Yeah.
Are you going for it tonight?
Nah, you know what? I'm just going to go down and see this band and head home. I want somebody to be there to like actually document me eating this.
It's called a Philly taco?
Philly taco. Yeah, if you just do a search probably on YouTube or on Facebook, you'll find there's a thing out there about it.
Yo, maybe I could maybe I could steal it and get it out here.
There you go.
Because did you know that when you say, like a friend of mine was asking me, he goes, so how is the fettuccine Alfredo? I go, dude, they don't have that here. What it is, I looked up the history, and it's a dude named Alfredo moved to Chicago, and he took just regular Italian cream sauce, and he made it famous, fettuccine Alfredo. But they don't have it here. Or pepperoni pizza. Pepperoni is a pepper, like a big yellow or green pepper.
Okay.
When you say pepperoni, yeah, it's a vegetable, the pepperoni. What you get on the pizza here, that's called salami picante pepperoni. Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, but this Philly cheese taco thing, man, That sounds badass.
Yeah, yeah. It's like heaven.
So who are you going to see, man?
I'm going to see that band New Year's Day.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. They from Philly?
No, they're actually from California.
Okay.
But yeah, their album came out 2 weeks ago, and I interviewed the guitar player a couple weeks ago. I interviewed the singer the other day, so I'm going to go down and check them out tonight and head on home.
What kind of stuff is it?
It's like poppy industrial rock.
Ah, sounds interesting.
Yeah, yeah. They're played a lot with Sirius XM Octane, like kind of like a newer rock metal type. You know, all that new rock metal is all like digital and electronic now.
You know, I'm telling you, man, this is a big thing for me. I'm like, I carry the torch of old school when it comes to playing. You know, metal now, you can just, it's kind of like a Madonna album.
Yeah.
Most of the things are programmed drums, or the guy plays it and they put it in line, they quantize it, and then they quantize the guitar, and the guitar is perfect on the drum. And that's not humans playing it anymore, yeah, if you do that. And it's like, it kills me, because right away I can hear it's fake. And I can only get two listens out of a song if it's fake, unless it's a dance song. Right. You know, like why people are still into Zeppelin is because you're in the room with those guys at that moment.
Yeah.
That's beautiful, man. So like metal is, I'm so down on the way they're making metal these days, man.
Yeah, I went to a show last year and I literally watched a guy as they were getting up on stage and they were getting situated, literally plugged his iPhone in and set up the programming on his iPhone. And I was just,
oh,
here we
go. God.
This is what it's come to.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. But this is crazy. Like I had this dude, you know, like I told you, I make a lot of albums and most of the time I never meet the people. That's good and bad. But, you know, a guy called me from, I don't know, Germany or somewhere in Scandinavia. I forgot. And he says, yeah, we want you to record the drums and we want to know your price. And he goes, don't worry. We will quantize. We will do all that. So, you know, that's covered. We will take care of that. And I said, what? What do you mean? You're not touching my drums once I record them. And he goes, no, but it's the European standard of metal. I said, dude, I'm a New Yorker. You're not touching my drum tracks. And he goes, oh, man, but that's the sound we want. I said, okay, then just program it or call someone else, man. Because, you know, okay, if I'm going to play with Lady Gaga, it's a different story making her record. It's expected it's going to be programmed or put in line to be absolutely perfect.
Right.
But if you're going to call me, why the hell would you call me? If you're gonna fake it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it makes no sense.
So, yeah, man. So I don't know. A lot of the metal, I'm not complaining, but I am. They have good songs, but I miss the players, man. I miss the rock star.
I hear you.
I miss. Don't you miss the rock star? Don't you miss like David Lee Roth, like the real shit in the old days? You know?
Absolutely. The whole thing's changed. I think that's a lot of the. You know what it is too. Like. Rock and roll's not dangerous anymore. Like rock.
No, everybody's fucking sober. Even me. Yeah. When I sober up, man, it's like, you know, the world has changed. No, but it's crazy. You're true. It's not, the danger is gone. It's like a bunch of kids. Like these kids, they call me and they go, okay, the session's at 9 a.m. tomorrow. We're not going to start that late. I'm like, wait, you want me to be there at 9? I mean, it's like a different generation.
Yeah.
Like we'd be going to bed at 9
right.
in the morning.
Right.
You're right, man. The danger's taken out. That's so fucking true.
Yeah, that's. I mean, that was the whole appeal to rock and roll forever. It was the danger, you know, the sex, drugs, and rock and roll part. And it's just not there anymore.
It's gone, man. It's like Friday night video game wars. These kids.
Yeah, they'd rather be home playing their video games on a Friday night than going out to a rock show.
Yeah, instead of the girl, they're after like Laura Croft. I'm like, dude, it's not real. He's like, it is in my room.
Really
unbelievable.
You know, it's funny. Like, I got two daughters. One's 21 and the other one's 15. And they're both total video gamer girls. And that's like,
really?
All I care about is video games. and I take them to video game conventions. And I walk around these conventions and I just like kind of shake my head and laugh. And I say to them, I'm like, these people are so frightening because you can see like they don't like a lot of them, like they're not showered. You can tell like they're wrapped up in their house for probably weeks on end playing these freaking video games. And the world just shuts down. It's so scary.
It's like a prog rock convention. If you get the same people. At the Prague conventions, it's like it's like they got the Star Wars Pez dispenser, you know, like the Star Trek people are kind of like Prague people and video people. Right. They're all connected, man. It's a conspiracy, brother.
Oh man! Everybody just needs to eat a fully taco, have a couple beers, and walk out.
That's it. But man, you said something brilliant. I'm going to use it. The danger has been taken out of rock and roll. That's so true. That's what's missing, man.
It is.
It's like they watched it on TV or YouTube, but it's like going to the Museum of Natural History and seeing a dinosaur bones and goes, wow, that was real at one point. Like these guys are watching Motley Crue documentary. By the way, I saw the Dirt movie and it's brilliant. Have you seen it, Motley Crue?
Here you go. Funny story. So the day it came out, I couldn't wait to watch it. And I wanted my daughter to watch it with me because I mean, I take them to concerts. I'm trying to like pass that rock and roll torch to them and teach them rock and roll. And so we sit down and that opening scene where they're at the party,
man.
And the girl starts squirting.
My
15-year-old daughter's mouth dropped. She looks at me and she's like, I didn't sign up for this. And she got up and walked out of the room.
You know, that one scene is it must have stopped a lot of people from continuing. I was like, oh, I can't believe – like I couldn't believe that was an opening scene. It was a great opening scene.
Absolutely.
But I was kind of shocked that they did that because it's kind of like a movie that, you know, a lot of kids are watching and shit. But it's Motley Crue, man.
Yeah, exactly. right there.
Yeah, but I mean, so like you're right because like a lot of these students of mine, like the kids, they're kind of looking at it as like, wow, that must have been crazy times. But I don't know when the cutoff point was when people stopped doing this shit. You know, I don't know, like now they're just saying, wow, that was crazy times. And where are the people who, you know what they did? They had to get day jobs.
Yeah, yeah. You know what? But when the grunge scene came in, it kind of killed it because everybody just got so depressed in the music. Yeah. It wasn't exciting. Yep. It wasn't about the party or the good times anymore. It was about just depression and darkness.
You know, I was there, and I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember I was with TNT, and I'm with TNT, and we're on Atlantic Records, and we took photos like that week, and we sent them to the record company, and I had like that Indian thing around my neck, like, you know, like the Indian choker thing,
right?
And I had snakeskin boots. I was wearing a vest with no shirt on, like completely – you know, 80s, early 90s, long ass hair. I look at the pictures now, it's like, holy shit. But I remember we sent them to the record company and it was Christmas time. And after Christmas, we went into the record company's office and Nirvana Teen Spirit hit that year. It was 1990. So I knew watching that video, I said, this is so huge. And he's got his grandmother's sweater on. I go, something's going to change. We go into the record company's office. They're all dressed like fucking Nirvana. Like, but before Christmas, they were dressed like us.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And then I remember the A&R guy saying, you got to get rid of those cowboy boots, man. I was like, what happened to you since last week? Well, you get amnesia? Yeah. But it changed that quickly. And then it became uncool to play guitar. Like, if you were really good, it was like, oh, man, this guy practices too much. It was like, and people started to try to play bad. It was fucked up, man, but it killed us for like 10 years.
See, that's when I was able to shine because I sucked so bad. And that's when I was able to play because I was able to play grunge in my punk rock grunge band called the Dead Gerber Babies.
Dead Gerber Babies, amazing.
I got away with it because it was just slop grunge rock, you know, and it worked.
Amazing. No, that's the best comment. You had a killer, a great comment tonight, but that's when I was able to shine as brilliant, man. Yeah, I mean, you went from like Randy Rhoads on the cover of Guitar Magazine to Papa Roach, you know, shit like that. I'm not saying anything bad about those guys, but I just remember looking at these covers going, wait a minute, you know, what happened to like Malmsteen on the cover or, you know. It became like uncool to be good, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a weird time. You know, it's funny because I remember like with the whole flannel thing and all. And I just remember being a kid wearing flannels in the 70s. And then remember in the 80s, it was so uncool to have flannels. And then I'm thinking to myself, I'm in my 20s. I'm like, I'm fucking buying flannels again. What's going on here? Like, it's cool now.
It was unbelievable because like talking about TNT, it was like the band Trickster came out that year. And all these, like, it was like Mad About Plaid.
Yep.
They all had the fucking flannel with the cutoff sleeves.
Yeah.
And I actually went and got one. And I thought it was cool. Like green flannel. And me too. It was like brainwashed. I got brainwashed into thinking it was cool. Not from Trickster. But, you know, everybody started to change the style. It was weird, man. And it happened like overnight.
Yeah.
Overnight, man. Crazy.
It
yeah, but I mean, so we miss rock stars. We miss that fucking thing, man. And the danger is definitely gone now.
Yeah. It's a whole, yeah. I mean, between that and the world of social media and all, because as great and convenient it is for social media where, you know, a normal everyday fan can, like, reach out to their musical idols or whatever and possibly get, you know, that big retweet from them or a response on social media. Like, come on, if that would have happened to us in the 80s, we would have shit ourselves. Like, if, you know,
it's not right.
Yeah.
It's not good. It's not right because, like, I shouldn't be able to talk to Eddie Van Halen.
Exactly.
I should not. And that I email him and he writes me back. That's what killed it. Yeah. That's what's killing it. And I put a post the other day. I can do like the greatest drum video and I'll get like five people going, that's great. I'm exaggerating, but then I could write something stupid. Like last night I was, Italy just got Baywatch, by the way. So, my wife broke the remote control for the television. So I'm laying in bed and I got my dog on my feet and my cat on my chest and the other cat laying next to me. I said, this is a beautiful moment. But unfortunately, I have to get out of bed to change the channel because the remote control is broken. And Baywatch came on. And I'm like, I cannot fucking watch this, man. And I had to sit through the whole episode. But it was like a Baywatch marathon. And I was freaking out because I didn't want to get up. So anyway, I put a post on it on Facebook. And it's like 200 people commenting. Bah, 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 bah. And I could do this great fucking drum video. And I get like five people commenting. So what I'm trying to say is, social media has become a way to judge people's popularity.
Yeah.
And they forget about your whole history. They forget about your past. They start to say, he's not that famous. He only has 100 likes. Or he only has, he's only got 25 views. So it must be horrible. Like I got turned down from a promoter in Switzerland from doing a clinic because he told my friend a friend of mine called up promoter that books shows and he said, I want to bring John to Switzerland to do a couple clinics. And the guy said, I'll call you tomorrow. So he calls my friend, the connection, and he says, you know what? Why would you work with John? He's, you know, maybe he's been in some bands and stuff, but you're going to lose money. And my friend says, what do you mean? Why would I lose money? He goes, because he's really not that popular. He's only got 6,000 views on this video, and he's only got this amount of likes. And my friend called me and said, he doesn't want to book you because the amount of views and likes. And I said, I can't believe this, man. So I booked it with another guy, and it sold out. I had like fucking over 100 people at a fucking drum clinic.
Nice.
With these days, that's a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely.
And who was there, the fucking guy that didn't hire me. And afterwards, my friend introduced us, and I didn't say, hey, you're the guy, but he asked me for my phone number. And I gave him the wrong number, of course. You know, and I'm like, I felt like saying, what are you doing here, idiot? I thought I wasn't that popular, you know. But what I'm trying to say is the new generation doesn't get out anymore.
Nah.
They don't meet people in clubs, and it's about how many likes and how many views. And there's people who haven't even played shows, and they're making a living off YouTube selling videos and selling things. They're like YouTube superstars. I mean, YouTube superstars. I can't say if it's good or bad, but to me, it's just really weird, man.
Weird. It's totally weird, yeah. And they're making big bucks off of this stuff.
I know. And if I'm home and I got time, I'm not on YouTube checking videos. I'm like going practice still. And a lot of people are just like – drum lessons and guitar lessons, I've seen a decline like 50% down.
Wow.
Because kids, if they want to, okay, for example, if you were a kid years ago and you said, I want to play like Neil Peart from Rush, you go to a drum teacher and you say, you know, I want to learn some Rush shit. But the kid now, he goes, I want to play like Joey Jordison from Slipknot. Just go check him out online, man. There he is.
Right.
You don't have to go to drum lessons anymore. No. Well, you do because you have to learn the basics. But kids have everything at the touch of their fingers now. And I saw the Kiss of Death. Now, if you buy a Fender guitar, you can go on their Fender website and you get free video lessons. So you just killed the local guy teaching in the music store because now the kids are not going to come to him. And he's got to go start a Spandau Ballet cover band to make. No, you know what I'm saying? It's like nuts. We can't argue with what's happening, but it's really fucked up for people my age. And I don't know how old you are, but I'm 51 now, and the generation is just like, it's like, what the fuck happened, man? And when did it change?
I'm 49, so I'm right behind you.
Hey, you're right there, man.
Yeah.
What was your first concert?
Judas Priest, Defenders of the Faith Tour, 1984, Philadelphia Spectrum.
Oh, gee, that's cool, man. That's cool. Priest.
Yeah.
Mine was the Doobie Brothers.
Hey, no. Was What's Happening There?
I remember when Reruns off the recorder?
Yeah.
And the whole fucking auditorium stopped and was like, Rerun.
Which Doobie you be?
Rods, you got a quarter? Yo, Rods, you got a quarter? Unbelievable, man. Yeah, Doobie Brothers 1979. And I saw Queen with Freddie Mercury in 1980, which was sick, man.
That's awesome.
That was sick. Yeah, man. Anyway, man, fucking have your pizza, have your taco, go kick ass and play some Stone Leaders, please, brother.
You too, man. That's what I'm gonna do. This is great.
Yeah, you should keep in touch, man. You sound like you're really cool. Hopefully I get to meet you.
Yeah, man. Come to Philly Tacos on me.
That's great.
And some beers. You won't have to worry about playing afterwards. Just relax.
Yeah. I stopped, man. I it's been a year and a half without any booze, man.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I always thought like, wow, life's going to change. I'm going to wake up and be like, wow, every day is you know, so much easier. It's the same shit without a hangover. No, I mean, I enjoyed my life, so it's okay, man. But have some beers on me, brother.
Absolutely.
And have your taco. But definitely keep in touch, maybe on Facebook or something,
yeah,
you know?
On Facebook. I'll send you a request right now.
Definitely, man. You seem really cool. Thanks for everything, bro.
No problem, man. Thank you. Good luck with everything, bro.
You got you out.
Bye. We'll be right back.
Tundra Nerdy Rocks, Bay Raggy here. And there they are, Stone Leaders with A Box of Time. That's their first single, and they have a lyric video for that as well. Check it out. It's on YouTube. And look for Stone Leaders all over social media, as well as John Macaluso. Like them, love them, follow them, subscribe to them, support them, share them, buy the music, do what you got to do. Just stay driven with them all. And stay driven with us as well. That's right. Look for us, Totally Driven Entertainment, Totally Driven Radio, or myself, Bay Ragney. Like us, love us, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. As well as we're on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher, Blog Talk Radio. We are everywhere. Do it. Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. I'd love you for it. And hopefully you'll love us as well. So there you go. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Tune in Thursday night. We're talking with the band Any Given Sin, as well as author of Good Advice from Professional Wrestling, Mr. Darren Polchowitz. Until then, stay tuned.